Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Pai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So in today's episode, we're covering Burnersphere, which is part immersive documentary as well as a social VR platform. And so Burnersphere is by Athena Demos and Doug Jacobson, their BRC VR, which started in the pandemic where they had already been capturing lots of different footage and 2D footage and started to do spatial capture. And they essentially translated the entire playa into a virtualized alt space world that during the pandemic became one of the official sites when they couldn't go to the actual Burning Man, could go to one of these virtual satellite sites that were an official exhibition of the Burning Man and ways to gather the community together and still show different aspects of virtual art that was being created. And so when AltSpace VR shut down in 2023, against all advice from everybody in the XR industry, they created their own social VR platform, collaborating with a number of the people that were laid off from Microsoft. They're coming from a film background, and so they're creating these 360 videos, 180 videos, stereoscopic, Gaussian splats, and photographs, basically anything you can think of. They've been capturing and documenting Burning Man over the years, and then that they're using this Burnersphere as a platform to create a spatialized context where you can explore around and get a sense of how everything's laid out, but also allow you to dip into these immersive documentaries to give you a much better look as to what was happening there. And so it's a bit of a visual anthropology, spatial anthropology, but also just a documentary, immersive documentary platform where a lot of this is being streamed in from Vimeo. And there's also like a social VR component so that they're trying to recreate different aspects of the culture and the community there at Burning Man. There's 10 different principles that Burning Man is based upon, and they're trying to embody each of those principles. And so how do you bring a lot of those principles out into the wider world in a virtualized context? There's also these different events that they're having. So they're trying to seed this social VR platform by having gatherings and kind of recreating different aspects of that community that is happening at Burning Man. We'll be covering all that and more on today's episode of Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Athena and Doug happened on Monday, November 24th, 2025. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, everyone. I'm Athena Demos, and I am co-founder, CEO, and co-producer at Big Rock Creative and Burnersphere. And for me, it's about community building, bringing people together, finding activities and ways in which people can have a shared experience in the Burnersphere.
Hi, my name is Doug Jacobson, and I'm the other co-founder of Big Rock Creative. A lot of focus on the creative aspects of it and the sort of editing of the videos, directing and laying out of the world, and always trying to rethink, especially social VR, in a way that's very different and pushing it in various different directions. So I'm always looking for how can we do this in a better way or a different way or try something new and experimental.
Nice. And maybe each of you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Sure. I come from cinema. I went to USC Film School in the 90s, and I've been working in the film industry, making documentaries and films and things like that. And then when COVID hit, I started getting into VR, as a lot of us did, and fell into a very long story, which I don't have time to get into here, but ended up doing the virtual Burning Man and really enjoyed shooting and experiencing these virtual formats, 180, 3D, 360. You know, they were very powerful new cinema formats that had been underexplored, and that's something that I'm very excited about as a film background person.
My background is I also come from television and film, but I started as an actress and then progressed into production. I found that every time I got hired as an actress, especially on independent film, there would be like, oh, we don't have a line producer or we don't have a script supervisor. And I would hop into those roles because I was really good at taking large amounts of chaotic minutiae and putting it into order. That's like a superpower of mine, spreadsheets. And then I found that I was really good at it. And so I transitioned into producing and actually doing film and television producing and stuff like that. And I was doing large scale event producing. I started producing events, and I was a regional contact kind of like being an ambassador for Burning Man in Los Angeles. So I was the contact person for all the burners in LA to the Burning Man office. And I produced big events. Like we had this one event called the LA Decompression, started it in 2002 with four of my friends, built it up from an 800 person event to an 8,000 person event in a matter of 10 years. And I took those skills from large scale event production and from film production and applied it to producing virtual reality. And that's what happened in 2020 when COVID hit and everything was shutting down. You know, Doug and we had a third person working with us contacted me, and I had just gotten to Mexico, and they were like, hey, we got this up on Altspace. You have to come check it out. And that was my first time actually in virtual reality. I had put on a Google Cardboard and I had looked at things, but that never really felt like I had a sense of presence inside the world. But this was the first time I felt like I was at Burning Man. I am there in a digital sense, and it was amazing. So I took all my production skills and applied it to how do we get the community together? And it was actually up on Altspace a week to the day before Marion Goodell announced the cancellation of Burning Man for 2020 due to COVID. So we were already live and talking to the Burning Man office, like, hey, like this works. We can bring the community together. And that was the beginning of it all. It was an answer to a need more than let's make this product and go to market. That's not what we were doing. We were just getting the community together. And in a way, that's still what we're doing, even though we have a product and have gone to market.
Exactly. But yeah, we're sort of, it's definitely veering on the labor of love side more than the, you know, because, you know, VR is more than anyone in the world can, you know, more about where VR is struggles. And so we're, you know, we're going headlong into that space and just figuring it out in a way again.
Yeah, well, I know that within the context of this overlap between social VR and Burning Man, you know, with the pandemic, everything had to go remote. And so there was a number of different satellite manifestations of Burning Man in 2020 and 2021. Right. I believe it got back in 2022. And so at the time there was a lot of openness for, you know, how to like translate some of the experience that happens at Burning Man into these different digital platforms. And I felt like that the Altspace manifestation was able to recreate some of those like serendipitous collisions and the playa magic that the actual Burning Man would have relative to the other platforms, just because of the immersion and the ability of what you're able to do within the context of a platform like social VR. So I was always super impressed with how much you were able to translate the entirety of the playa into a single world. And then at some point, you know, Altspace shuts down in 2023. And then so this platform that you'd created to be able to have a place for people from the Burning Man community to have this online gathering and all the work that you put into that kind of went away with that platform. However, all the assets and the skills, and I guess there was enough momentum for you to continue the project into your own independent platform. So maybe you could just give a bit that context of the waning down of the previous Altspace version and then the building up of what is now Burnersphere.
Well, we have a lot of those assets, like you said, and people and fans and we sort of were like, our first thought was like, okay, we'll just put this on another platform, like VR chat or something. But as we started to really think about what it would take to do that, we realized that a lot of these platforms, and we toured like 30, 40 platforms at the time, everything from the NFT platforms at the time to, like I said, VR chat type platforms. And we just didn't control our destiny. And we also didn't, there were features we wanted to do that were not done the way we would want, especially because we were going to be adding in this new piece of content, which is documentary. We're going to be really cramming in video and documentary in a way that we weren't doing before. And so we kind of was like, we probably should just build our own, which is kind of insane now that I look back on it. And it took us a year of working with Burning Man for them to get their head around what we wanted to do, because it was sort of new to them, even though they were familiar with BRCVR. So we just kind of went for it. And we know that the burners are out there. We know that they're, you know, it's really onboarding is our biggest challenge with any VR platform, and sort of getting everybody and getting the message out, of course. But we have a very specific audience that is not always into video games and VR and stuff. So it's sort of our next journey in a way.
And we knew we wanted certain functionality that as we went looking for a new home, so Altspace closed March 10th of 2023. That was the sunset date. And we threw a big party right before. There was sort of our last hurrah on the platform. And then Doug and I actually, like, we had been told by influential people in XR, don't build your own platform. And so we earnestly went looking for maybe a small company we could partner with and have a section of their platform. Or, of course, we looked at VR Chat, we looked at Engage, we looked at Spatial, like we looked at the main players. And each one of them had things that we loved and that didn't work. And as we looked at everything, we had a pretty decent heart-to-heart conversation about, do we want to take this on? Like, this is going to be a heavy lift, a very heavy lift, especially since neither one of us have written code. Neither one of us actually are software developers. So it's a big thing to take on. But as burners, we take on big things. You know, just because you don't know how to weld, it's not going to stop you from building a 50-foot tall metal sculpture. You know, you figure it out. You learn the process. You bring other people onto the platform that do have those skills. And that's exactly what we did. Like, the biggest barrier was, we don't know what we're doing. And that's not a barrier in the burner community. Oh, that just means we need more communal effort. That just means we need more participation. That means we need to be more radically inclusive. We need to put a team together and make this happen. And that became more exciting to us than fearful. We were more excited about the prospect of what we can learn and all the people we could bring together. And then, you know, there's amazing people out on the market looking for jobs and projects to work on, because Altspace went away. Microsoft fired their entire MRTK team. And so all the mixed reality guys are out there looking for projects. And some of them formed a little company, and we were able to hire them and bring them on and have them build our own Altspace, even though it's not.
HoloLens, there is a HoloLens fingerprint on this, because Bo, especially Connor, who did a lot of our UI, you know, worked in those 3D spaces and was already thinking like we were, like, I don't want locked, vaguely sci-fi menus to your face. You know, maybe everything should be a natural machine that's in the world. And then once we start thinking like that, you know, so just trying to not look like the other platforms in that way. But yeah, they're great devs. And
yeah. So we brought on Virtual Makers, which was Alon and Steven. And then they introduced us to Bo. Bo was on HoloLens. And so, like, all of these people are coming, and then they bring more people in to work on things. And then we have other programmers that we've worked with when we were at Altspace or shortly thereafter. And so we just had this team that we were able to put together to build what you just experienced.
Yeah, and it does very much cross multiple genres in terms of, it's sort of like an immersive documentary of sorts that allows you to navigate a virtual simulation of the Burning Man architecture of the actual Black Rock City, where you're going around to these different locations. And I really love the way that you're able to kind of spatially contextualize the footage that you have, that is sometimes just footage that you're watching a moment of a specific location, or sometimes it's a more of a narrative like treatment featuring a profile of a certain community, or it's a 3D video. So you got a variety of different, like, 180, 360 photospheres, 3D stereoscopic videos. And so they're kind of spread out across all the different spaces, but they're also recreating a lot of the virtual art that was sort of what was happening with the Altspace version, which was kind of like a recreation of the entire playa. And so I'm just curious to hear how you think of what you've created, because it's part social VR platform, part immersive documentary, part recreation of the playa and a spatial kind of modeling.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious how you start to describe what Burnersphere is.
Well, if you think about it, we're not the same kind of user-generated content that AltSpace and VR Chat were, where people are just putting up. So we got lost in a sea of worlds because it is user-generated content and that we're working with the artist and bringing in their art. But we're curating, in a way, the way it's laid out and the time of day across the whole thing. So there are some advantages to having it from the platform up. And you're not going to get lost in a sea of craziness. It's going to be somewhat curated. But also, the idea that we're saying to people, you see this fish art here. This is real. Somebody really made this. And here's even a video of it from Burning Man. So you have that kind of like constantly like, these are real objects. People really build these. And what I love the most about it is there is no format that I can't do in this project. 2D, 3D, 180, 360, photogrammetry, Gaussian splats. And I get to throw everything at it. It's not just a 16:9 2D frame that I'm sort of traditionally working with. So it opens up a lot of fun. And sometimes people will be like, I did a Thunderdome documentary. Thunderdome's a camp at Burning Man that was started in 1999. Playa echoing the movies, but went off in their own direction. And I was interviewing the girl, the main woman, Marisa. She says, "Hey, we started in 1999. I'm like, "I was there in 99. I shot this." So I went back and found my archival footage from the actual first year I accidentally had of Thunderdome. I'll tell you a funny story. I put it in the frame. It's an 8K frame. And I couldn't see it because it was 640 by 480. It was a tiny dot in the frame. And I was like, oh my God. So, but anyway, I was able to use that 2D footage from the past historically into this new modern format. So there's just like no format we can't use and display. And that's part of the fun. Athena, what did I miss here?
The most fun that I have is getting that message from Doug telling me that he's figured out how to use a different format. Like, I remember that moment when Doug contacted me to tell me that his original film from 1999, he figured out how to get it in, and it's in there. And so you can see like Thunderdome from the past. But then this year I filmed, so Marisa, who's the head of Death Guild, and Death Guild is the camp that puts on Thunderdome, and it is Mad Max Thunderdome. You go in there, you're on bungees, and there are these people, there's heavy metal music playing, and everybody climbing all over the dome, and there's these guys that take the people that are getting ready to fight, and they pull them back, and they pull the bungees, and they let them go, and then they slam into each other, and they start hitting each other with Nerf bats, with foam-covered bats, I should say. And people get hurt, you know, but for the most part, it's gentle as it can be when you're beating the crap out of your best friend and working out whatever you need to work out. But before each fight, before each evening of fights, I should say, Marisa, who is a opera singer, comes out and sings some aria. And I happened to catch her singing one this past year, and it was just beautiful. And I got the whole thing in 360. So Doug has his video back from 1999, and then you walk into this circle, and now you're in a 360 bubble from 2025, and it's the same dome, but it's a different format, and it's a different moment in time. And then the dome is modeled, and then we have bats and shields. That they don't give you shields anymore, though, but there's shields and bats so that you can pretend like you're fighting each other. And, you know, we're avatars, and the bats are just going straight through the avatar. But much like children, when you fight, you're like, bam, 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 bam. And you're like making the sound effect that it would make when you're hitting somebody. Like Batman, you know, the old Batman. Whoosh, bat, boom, bam. Yeah.
There. Didn't mean to go off on the Thunderdome thing. We should have shown you that world. It's coming soon. But yeah, it's that distinction from user-generated content to curated documentary experience, but still social VR, changed the way we laid it out and the time of day, you know, and stuff like that. We do want...
Curated documentary experience is a great way of describing it.
Yeah.
And so I know that in the past, Burning Man has always had like films and people coming in and film and documenting what's happening there. And I'm sure there's certain conditions under which that you are able to participate in documenting different aspects of Burning Man. And then after the pandemic, there was kind of an opening up of like new formats of like, now they're more open to having like photogrammetry and other kind of spatial capture with recreation of 3D models and then Gaussian splats. So you have this virtual version of Burning Man that's like an archival documentation and then documentary. And then the thing that I was wondering is that it's also like this kind of startup company. And then I'm wondering how the 10 values with decommodification, how that starts to bump up against what you're doing. And then thinking about the larger picture of like other people that are potentially coming in to try to commodify what was happening at Burning Man, and how what you're doing is not that, but it is a certain element of option for commodification and paying and becoming a member. And so I'm wondering how that gets sorted in terms of those 10 philosophical principles, especially the decommodification and what you're doing there at Burnersphere.
So decommodification doesn't mean you can't charge money. You know, there's hard expenses that need to be covered. It's why we call the membership camp dues, because at Burning Man, when you pay your camp dues, it's your contribution for the whole of what the camp has to offer. And while you might receive some things in exchange, so maybe there's a meal plan or showers or water or power, which are the common things that camp dues cover, it covers that because buying as a collective actually saves you money, is more efficient and more sustainable than everybody bringing a plastic, you know, 10 plastic jugs of water. That's a lot of plastic. It's very wasteful. But if you pool your resources, it's more sustainable and it's better for the environment. But the camp, like BlackRock Yearbook, which is what Doug and I belong to, the camp is providing something for the city. People come, they get their yearbook photo taken. And then after the event, mainly Doug, because he's got copious amounts of free time, facetiously speaking, puts together the entire yearbook that then gets published at blackrockyearbook.com. And people love those photos and they use them as their profile photos, and they come and they're so excited to get their photos taken. So that is your camp dues goes to cover that. And every camp has the thing that they're doing. So Burnersphere is like a camp, and you pay your camp dues and it's not very expensive, and it helps cover the cost of servers and development and added features, video editing, stuff like that. So it's covering the cost so that everyone can participate and share it with the world. And so there's no cost to join. It's free. You can join. You can enjoy pretty much a lot of the app. I know that you went in first as a guest to see what was explorable, and fair amount. And then, you know, going out into Deep Playa, all the stuff around Setter Camp is free. And then going out into Deep Playa, there's cost because now you're pinging the server more than when the guest worlds are all sort of loaded into the headset when you do your first download. And all the rest of them are sort of pinging the servers. And so that has a hard cost. And so that's what camp dues are for. Now, the commodification side of things actually has to do with sponsorships, promotional objects. So we have had a number of companies that we have worked with that would love to put their logo on the footage that was filmed at Burning Man, but they can't, because that would be commodification of the footage, because they're putting their logo on it. You know, we've shot with the Canon R5C with the dual fisheye lens. It was beautiful. That camera produced amazing footage, and that's our 180 stereo footage. And Canon, you know, we talked to them, and they very much would love to do a promotional deal with us. And that would have helped us greatly with funding, because it would have brought us some funding, and we would have been able to give them some footage that they could then use on their social media channels. That's commodification. So, like, you know, our hands were tied. It would be super helpful to get sponsorship money, but we can't. We can't get sponsorship money because that would be commodifying the experience. So by decommodifying it, we can't have Canon logos in our world. We can't have Insta360. We love Insta360. They help us out every year. And every year when their new cameras come out, we buy a bunch of them and they give us a deal on them. So they're super helpful, but they understand that we're not going to put their logo on their footage. And my favorite was X-Grid. X-Grid this year, we wanted to see if their camera, if we could use it to record Gaussian splats. And we don't have the money to buy that camera. That is a ridiculous amount of money. And they're like, you know what? It's a use case. Here, take this, go to Burning Man, capture as much as you can. We'll help you with the software on the other side. And they completely understood decommodification. They were like, you don't have to put our logo on anything. We just want to see how this is going to work. Like a pure partnership. They've never had their camera used in this way. They've never had it used in this environment, in these extreme weather conditions. So it was an experiment. And their camera did great. It worked great. It worked flawlessly. And right. Now we're, Doug's getting it into the app. We could talk about it. And talk about how great they were and all these cameras that we've worked with, but we can't put their logo on footage shot at Burning Man.
Also, it also means that, so these 10 principles are in the bubble of the app. When you go inside the app, it's operating under these 10 principles, not necessarily outside in the global world. And so we can't sell things in the app. We can't put Pepsi signs in the app. We can't. So we are operating. It's very challenging, and it's a whole discussion. These 10 principles, what do they mean in a digital space? And it's something we've been grappling with since 2020. And the most misunderstood one is the decommodification one. But the 10 principles are designed to be counterweights and something you constantly strive for. For example, Athena's example of bringing the water bottles. Well, that's radical self-reliance. You know, you bring in your own water, you're taking care of yourself. But that bumps up against communal effort because we all should share the water, so not have so much trash. So they're never, anytime somebody pulls one of the principles out and starts banging you over the head with it, they're doing it wrong because there's always a counter anchor. But I would expect some people to get philosophically upset that we're doing this or whatever. But we think,
of course,
we think that this is obvious to be done. This is an event. Is what I call a wide narrow. It's Burning Man, so it's about Burning Man, which means like you gotta have some interest in that, but anybody can enjoy it. Why do people enjoy art, enjoy conceptual, you know, you don't have to even care about Burning Man to enjoy the content inside the app. So what do we call that, a four quadrant, you know, kind of thing? I think we answered
Larry that. Harvey always said, nothing less than all 10 will do. So Larry Harvey's one of the founders of Burning Man, if not the founder of Burning Man, carried the torch, brought the people together, built the man out on Baker Beach with some friends of his. And he's also the one that wrote down the 10 principles. And the origin of the 10 principles wasn't like Moses from the mountain came down with 10 commandments. That's not how it happened at all. And in fact, that's probably not how that happened at all. But either way, there were several people, myself included, and someone in New York and someone in Austin, George Papp in Austin, not that Dave in New York. And we were all organizing events in our cities in the early 2000s. And when you fill out a permit to do a large scale event on city streets, they want to know, any city government wants to know, who are you? What organization do you represent? We say, oh, we're Burners. And in 2002, 2003, they were like, well, who are Burners? Like, what are you? And we needed an answer to that. And so unbeknownst to any of us, we were all going back to the Burning Man office asking them the same question. What did we put on this form of who we are? And so Larry Harvey went off in his answer to who are Burners. He wrote 9 principles. And all he was doing was in observance of what we were doing. Already, he wrote down, we're participating, we're being radically inclusive, we're being radically self-reliant. And the word radical isn't extreme. He like gobbled up words. He was an avid reader of philosophy. So the word radical comes from the Latin word radix, which means the foundation of. So it's your foundation of self-expression. It's your foundation of inclusion. Not that it's an extreme thing, but it's the basis by which we exist. So that's what he means by radical. So he came up with nine and went back to the org and said, here's our nine principles. And their first, they were like, these are great. Nine? We have 10. 10's like this nice round number. Can you go back and come up with one more? And he did. And what he came back with was immediacy. And immediacy became that cornerstone to who we are, that we are present in the immediate moment, that we address immediate needs, that we are there as a whole in our be here now. And that became our 10 principles as a description of who we are, not a what we should be. And I use the principles to diagnose when a project isn't working. And I'm like, why is this not, you know, well-oiled machines, not what's not working? And I'll read all the 10 principles and be like, oh, I'm missing participation. Not enough people are participating. Or I'm missing leaving no trace. We're being too wasteful and this isn't working. And so I'm constantly adjusting whatever I produce, utilizing the principles. It doesn't have to have anything to do with Burning Man. I'm constantly using the principles to make whatever I do more efficient and better. Because it's how we function as humanity. It's the best of humanity when all 10 are at play.
Mm. By the way, Kate, don't get Athena started on the principles.
No, that's really, I think I love the principles and I love how they are expressed as a way of trying to codify what the culture and the experience of Burning Man is. And also just in this overall experience of both what was happening in AltSpace and also what you were doing in Burner Sphere is that I've never been to Burning Man. And so I've only seen photos and slight artifacts from it, but having a spatial context and the closest that I've had to kind of attending was being able to explore around and see the different language and lingo and posters with information and context around these principles. Also the culture of trying to describe what Burning Man is. And so in that sense, it becomes a more of a spatial documentary that is trying to capture these artifacts that not only have the photos and the video and the 360 video and the models, but also these posters and the other artifacts that feels like if you were to do a sort of visual anthropology of what's happening as this culture and to try to document in some ways, I feel like that you're finding new ways of documenting what's been happening within the context of this community. And of course, obviously the most important part of these Burning Man gatherings are the people and the relationships and the connections that are there. And so to just have the artifacts without having any people there, it's quite different than the Burning Man experience. But I think in some ways you're trying to create not only a documentation of what that culture is, but also to the best you can start to recreate the culture of that within the context of the social VR platform, which I think is still the very beginnings, but hopefully we'll be able to find a critical mass of people that also bring in that human element of people also coming in and participating and finding new ways of doing user generated content like you did at AltSpace, where people were able to turn to digital platforms and create art that was bringing in. So yeah, I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts of the other aspects that you're documenting and have this vision of kind of also recreating social relations that are happening there in the context of Burning Man.
I mean, what you just described is the reason why we decided to, you exactly encapsulated why we decided to do this despite the status of VR and COVID in the world. We thought that this is something valuable that should be done, and not only for this culture, but we can reskin our platform for other cultures. But this kind of experimentation and an explorable documentary with a social aspect to it is, I think, valuable, you know, in some form in the future, regardless of the trends and VR headsets. We will bring back more user-generated content. We want people to be able to create their camp. We have a toolkit that we want to be able to spot your objects in a world and create your own camp layouts and do more of that user-generated content. We just have very super limited resources. So we do have a roadmap of fun. We want to get there. We're just sort of starting from the scratch. That's why we're doing the camp dues right off the bat. You know, sort of, I always joke that the sort of VC way of looking through the lens is give it away for free, hockey stick, and then charge them. You know, I'm seeing this with Uber and Airbnb, and suddenly they're as expensive as the thing they were replacing. And so we thought, okay, let's not do that. Let's just tell everyone straight up front, this is a community funded project, and pitch in if you can, you know, and help out. And go forward. But we do want to bring back all the user-generated content. What's happening now is people are contacting us saying, hey, I got this Altspace world I used to have, or I have this new thing, and they would give it to me, and I'd work with them, and then I'd put it in. So it's sort of a manual user-generated content that way, but eventually, you know, we'll have a Unity uploader of some kind, and we'll bless certain people for them. But we're doing heavy scripting. We just got the drone show in from Burning Man.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, that's a lot of Unity scripting and stuff that we couldn't do in Altspace. Altspace was so locked down. So it's really this interactive scripting that we're starting to really utilize. That's because it's a game engine. Let's use some more games. I have some games coming. You know, I want to do a Burning Man mini golf inside of it and other kinds of things. But, you know, we're on a game engine. Let's do more of that rather than lock it down because of user-generated content.
Yeah, there's actually a couple camps or several camps that have little games as part of their camp offering. And so I very much would love to reach out to one of them and then put in an actual full-scale mini golf game that couldn't exist on Playa. It'd be too big, but we could definitely put it into VR. But we have had, like, Yunji gave us her Altspace world that was part of BRCVR, and that just went in the messages in the mist. We have
Tilt Brush Worlds.
The Tilt Brush World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you saw. And other artists are reaching out. And so we're just converting those into our format. You know, when you do your own platform, you want to have like your shaders that are not doing shader variant. You know, you want to make it as efficient as possible. And so we have to take people's stuff and sort of tweak it. And Burning Man sometimes will give us a temple, it'll be 30 million polygons, and we have to make it, you know, 100,000 polygons. So we have stuff like that that we always have to constantly do.
Now, a key experience of this experience of Burner Sphere is that there's a lot of documentary footage that is included from 360 photospheres, 180 stereoscopic videos that are either full screen or then sometimes a windowed effect, which gives a different perspective onto it. And we've got 2D videos and photos. And so with all this footage that's included in this app, is that coming in on the download or is it being streamed so that people can watch? You can basically expand out without having people to download even more stuff.
Correct. It's streaming in. And by the way, we're using Vimeo. Vimeo has a full streaming API, and it's been really great. It's not videos you can watch on Vimeo traditionally, but it is streaming in as HLS. And so we have 180 3D. You obviously go into a world and watch it alone, because nothing drives me crazier than as a documentary person than watching a documentary and someone's coming up and talking to you when you're not paying attention to. So all that video that's 3D in this frame is more like ambient video that we can talk, oh, look at that shot. But if we want you to focus on a documentary, we have you go into a solo world, be a solo documentary experience, and then you come back. So that's why we did that, because I didn't want social around watching a movie, because I don't like it when people talk when I'm watching a movie.
You can also notice, and by the way, he won't let me watch a movie with him. But I can also notice that how we film is different than the way you normally watch when you watch a documentary or any. The person never talks to the lens or to the camera. They were talking to the camera person and talking off to the side. You see them as, like, you know, you might have an over the shoulder, a dirty single. Like, there's all these like ways in which we shoot interviews. The way we shoot interviews is we tell the person, you're going to talk directly to the camera. And because the camera is the person's eyeballs. So now you're having this person talk to you, the listener, the person who's receiving the documentary. Now, that's difficult for even a seasoned actor to sit there and look at the camera, but to have somebody who's not used to being on camera and we tell them to do that, also difficult. So lots of times we put our face, like our eyes, here's the camera and our eyes are right here, and we're like looking at the person to make sure that they're looking directly in camera. So there's all sorts of filmmaking tricks that we have had to develop over the years. We've been filming 22, 23, 24, and 25 now at Burning Man since we built the platform, and we've had to figure out how to pull the best possible performance out of people that just spent the better part of 2 weeks in the dust pummeled by weather and finally getting their art piece up. And then we're standing there and putting a camera in their face and saying, okay, now talk directly to the lens and tell us about your art.
180 3D as a film format is a pain in the ass. In a way, it has a lot of cinema rules that, you know, so we were telling people, come into the camera, look in the camera. This is your friend who hasn't been to Burning Man, and you're telling them about your art piece. And so they come and go, hey, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. You'll see a lot of that happening because it's super effective there, but it's very limited on, you know, you can't do whip pans, you can't cut fat. There's a certain cut pace that I have to do in that format. And this is a lot of cinema rules with 183D. But when it's working, it gave you a sense of depth of Burning Man. Like, I've been shooting Burning Man since 1998. I have more footage probably than anyone that I've shot. And I've always been frustrated because it's been like 2D, a montage of art cars. And you're like, okay, there's a car, that's cool. But what I'm missing is scope. And when I got to this 3D format, 180 3D, I was like, oh my God, it's giving me scope. And we've had people, the emotional reaction we've had just from the 180 3D format, just focusing on that, has been incredible. People have cried. Everyone comes out and goes, when can I go to Burning Man now? Like, we've I've never had a response to a cinema format like this one. So I'm very interested in it and developing it more. And that's something that I absolutely love, especially as a documentary tool.
That actually happened to Alvin Graylin. He's like, I'm never going to go to Burning Man. I'll put on your headset and I'll watch the footage, but I'm not going to go. So I put him in the 180 stereo footage and showed him our What is Burning Man video, which you can see when you first join the app and you're in our gate world. There's a video there that's What is Burning Man. And that's normally, you know, what I show people if they just want, like, I just go in for 6 minutes and that's it. And that was Alvin. And I put him in the headset and he watched it for 6 minutes. He comes out of the headset. And he looks at me and he goes, how do I get tickets?
And he came. He was in our camp.
He came this year.
And he was super happy walking around. I mean, it was raining sometimes. He didn't care.
They didn't care.
So we had a weird thing. We had this my Black Rock yearbook, which is a very photographic media center camp taking yearbook photos. And then we had this XR section glued on. So we had drones, 360, you know, 3D. We had all this Gaussian splats and weird formats. And so we were all glued together as a media camp and going out and shooting and everybody, it was a really fun year, and having Alvin and the gang in was great. So your turn, Kent.
Yeah, I know. There was a time in my life when I was younger I want to go. And then don't, I think I'm maybe 50-50. I could see myself doing it, and I could also see that it would be a huge physical strain to be there. Yeah. So it's not an easy
thing. Can help you. We know people.
Right.
You could camp with us.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's one of those things that it feels like such a cultural, like everybody that's coming together, creating this art and such a whole experience. I also have a lot of subtle social anxieties around big groups of people that I do much better one-on-one. And so there's other parts of the experience that would not be my favorite, but I do love the idea of just going and exploring around. And, you know, I have never been to Burning Man, but I do get a sense of the discovery, exploring around, seeing the art, seeing some of the different artifacts, and also really appreciate, you know, I'm a huge documentary nerd, and I'm not sure if I would sit down and watch the footage back to back to back, like without the context of the spatial orientation, because I think it would be a little bit too decontextualized. But the fact that I'm able to explore around and get a sense of where I'm at and the overall playa and have a little bit of a mental map as to where things are at, that seems to help allow me to now look at what it actually looks like for some footage. And so I love the way that you have these blue circles that are painted on the ground. And if I want to go there, I can see like a moment that would be relative to that space and time, and to allow me to see the footage, and that helps to transport me there. So I've really enjoyed exploring around this burner sphere.
Great. I mean, that is the best I could hope for, right? Is that you're experiencing it the way I was hoping, and the way I like to also experience it. It needs context, otherwise it's just wait, where's that art? What's going on? Just stuff. But when you have context, out there, it's laid out. You walk around, you explore it. just like you're saying.
And I will say, having the digital map and having an understanding of like where things are or how Burning Man works, how you navigate around it in the virtual space, is also how you navigate around it in the physical space. Even though we're jumping from portal to portal, as you go out 6 o'clock road to the man, you have this sense of, I'm leaving the center camp area. I'm going out into open playa. Now I'm in open playa. Oh, I'm at the man base. That's its own experience. And then you head out towards 12 o'clock and you're going out there and now you're open to play. And so these quadrants are actually quite natural. We have so many people now that have started as virtual burners and then come to playa, and they have a complete understanding of where things are. Like, you have this huge leg up in your experience at Burning Man because you don't have to get there for the first time and go, where am I and what's going on? You have an understanding, a deeper understanding than somebody who's going for the first time and has never done the virtual.
There's actually a documentary coming out next year in HBO about Burning Man, and one of the characters in the documentary is our teammate Lindsay, who was with me since the beginning, and they follow her from the virtual to the actual real Burning Man for the first time. So they're following her story, going from, like, she knew all the inside jokes and all the little things because she was in the VR version, but then she was going out to the real one and experiencing, whoa, okay, now I'm here. And it's when/if you go, you'll be like, oh, I know this road, I know this layout, I know this camp, I know this. And you'll have like a weird memory of it, but it'll be for real anyway. It'll be a pretty trippy experience if you end up doing it.
It's certainly one of my highlights of experiences during the pandemic in 2020. It was so unexpected and so vast and such a technical feat to get everything into like a single world and alt space. And this one's broken up a little bit in the sense of trying to optimize it for the headsets and the platform. So,
By the way, I do have the original of the OG 2021 virtual playa in the app that has got all the low poly stuff, and you can go fly around just like you could in alt space. The original world is in the neighborhood zone if you go find it.
Okay.
It's in there.
Nice. So because there are so many clips and it's ongoing and expanding, I'm curious if you have like a total runtime of the amount of footage that if people were to go in. Like,
I'm only halfway. I have so much more footage I haven't even put in yet. I'm only probably a third through the footage. I've got so many more documentary pods I've cut, and so much. Every year we go out and shoot more stuff, and then I have it all organized on hard drives. So I would say now we have, you know, 4 or 5 hours of stuff in there, and you know, we probably shot 30-40 hours, and I'm just slowly putting it in. We're putting in the Bijou documentary now, we're putting in the marching band and center camp, like more documentaries are coming in.
We have Ajram Galactica we still need to finish. We have DMV, we shot DMV this year, we still need to finish that. Department of Mutant Vehicles, we have
your vehicle out,
DMIR.
And you have to go get it checked to make sure it's safe. And so there's a whole department called DMV. Then they made it like the DMV, but it's mutant.
And there's BMIR, which is Burning Man Information Radio. We did a whole segment about them that needs to get finished. Like, there's a lot. So we took on building a software platform, but then we're also documentary filmmakers. And so it's both. It's like, you know, you can see all these 360 or 180 documentaries that got filmed, and it's the documentary and it's its thing. And then you go and explore VR world and it's its thing. And we did both of them because why not? We took on two monumental projects and squeezed them together to create one.
Like, there's a documentary I have to edit about that beast that we showed you, that we shot a little doc, he interviewed him. So I'm going to cut a little doc pod on that, and you'll have a video there I need to finish. So there's just a lot more endless work to do. So I just keep putting on the, like, okay, let's make a virtual world. Okay, now I'm going to go cut a doc kind of hat. I come from editing and documentary, so that's where I feel comfortable in that area the most. So.
And then the platform itself, it is its own thing. Like, how we're using practical footage in with rendered worlds, Burning Man is a skin on it. but we could put any skin on it. So now that the platform launched on the Meta and the Steam store July 22nd, coincidentally, both of them within 10 minutes of each other approved the app, which was incredible. And so now it's out, we've worked out quite a number of bugs and there are others. And now we're looking for partners to, how do we tell your story? Because that will add even more functionality to the platform. So we know how we're going to tell the Burning Man story. And then is it documentary or is it fiction? You know, we could tell fictional stories. This is VR. If you can hallucinate it, we can create it. It can be anything. It could be all the worlds of Star Wars. We could build out all the planet worlds. And then the 360 bubbles could be Easter eggs from the filming of whatever the episodes are for whatever the TV series is for the story that's being told within the Star Wars universe. This is an example. I'm not saying we're working on that, but it could be anything. So how can we use this format of immersive storytelling to tell a different story?
Hmm. Yeah. And I went in originally as just a guest, which was like the free user. And then the camp mate gave me a code to be able to join. And there was as I went through as a guest, there were certain moments as I'm exploring around, I was like, oh, I actually would really want to see this or that. And so you kind of create this, you don't give everything away for free. You have things that you give a little bit of a taste. And then if you want to see a little bit more, then you come back. And then I went back and then was able to explore all these other worlds. And it was really nice to be able to, you know, go to the airport and fly around the entirety of the Burning Man and, you know, see the daytime of the car. And so it sounds like you're rolling out free features still, but also for the campmates, there's a lot of worlds that you're building out and that it's an ongoing project. And that as you join and become a member, then you get access to all these other things that the guests won't get.
Nailed it. Exactly. 100%. Where we have like five worlds, six, seven worlds probably that are waiting to open. And we're opening them every week and we're throwing an event and we also have artist talks. We've had four or five artists come in and speak next to their art piece and tell the story of that art piece. And it's becoming very popular with artists because they get to be there standing next to their art piece and telling you how they came about.
They get to interact with the audience. So the artist talks are all for campmates. And so campmates come and the artist talks about their piece and I conduct the interview and I ask them pretty standard questions, you know, tell us about your piece and why did you do it? And what was the origin story of the idea? How did you pull your team together? You stuff like that. And then we open it up. We let people ask whatever questions they want to ask. And it's really interesting to see what people are interested in or what their curiosities are. If it's a really big piece, everyone always wants to know how much it weighs. You know, they want to know with Naga and the Captainess, they were like, how many scales does this have? You know, there's all these individual hammered out bent scales on this giant sea serpent, which, by the way, if you're up in the Bay Area, is installed at Golden Gate Park at Rainbow Falls. There's a whole bunch of Burning Man art up in San Francisco right now that's got publicly installed.
Nice.
So we're trying to do more events. We're cold starting a platform. So we're, you know, you want to go in and you want to see people. So the way we're doing it is we're having marker points during the week with tours and events to start it, like everyone knows they can go see the game those times, and over time we'll add so many that there'll hopefully be enough going on all the time. But it is that cold start problem when you start a new platform. You know, the good news is when people start a new platform, they are like, help bring content. We're like, no, we have lots of content. We're fine with the content area. Now we just need to create events and moments that you know you can go in and hang out with everybody, that you know they'll be there. But if you went in and nobody was there, you'd still have a fabulous time looking at video and watching documentaries. And so it's designed for, like, even if it was a solo experience, you would still have a great time. That's my hope, at least.
Nice. Very cool. Well, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what each of you think the ultimate potential for this type of social VR, immersive documentary, documentation, and this kind of experience that you're creating. And what do you think that might be able to enable?
I think what we've created is a new format for immersive storytelling. It turns storytelling into story living. You're actually part of the content that you're learning about. I think that it is best for documentary and would be exceptional for translating museums into digital spaces, because then you can render the museum as well as maybe get a docent tour of the art pieces, or do a Gaussian splat of a gallery and have all that be explorable. I would love to do the Smithsonian's. I think putting them in a virtual space would just make them so much more accessible. So museums, other festivals, other cultures, Hollywood. Hollywood's looking for, you know, streaming is having a very difficult time right now. So Hollywood utilizing this as sort of the interim between gaming and traditional Hollywood storytelling, I believe is what we created, and will give them a way to engage with their audience more, turning the users into participants.
We're not the only ones obviously doing this, but the space is very fun and young and early days and explorable. So we it's like what Athena was saying, you know, where does this shine the most? Museums, dome experiences like we were having in the app, explorable narratives. For example, I went out and scanned, a friend of mine is a showrunner on a famous TV show. So we scanned the sets. And so now there's an opportunity possibly for the future for people to walk around the actual sets of the TV show. Or if someone could design a TV show where part of the narrative happens in a virtual space and part of it happens in the TV, you could have an adjunct storyline in a virtual space. And there's a way to blend the two. So that's kind of where a lot of interest too, using splats and such. So I just like the early days wild westness of it. Now, I do say my big line is it's a little bit lonely in the future. You know, like maybe we're off in some weird journey that, you know, the world hasn't quite caught up to yet, because you have video games are traditionally there and you have narratives and documentaries, but, you know, the people who watch documentaries don't always play video games and vice versa. So we're sort of peanut butter and chocolate in the future. And I'm not sure how it's all going to work out in the end, but it's going to be a hell of a story, Kent.
Awesome. And
actually, when we first showed the new Samskara to a group, somebody made a comment that I just absolutely love. They said, "You created the simulation that we want to live in." And I feel like what we have created gives people an opportunity to live in that simulation that they've always wanted to be part of.
Yeah. And to clarify, Doug, earlier you said there's a solo experience where you go in and watch 180 stereo video, which is really meant for a solo, but there are other dome experiences that you have with the blue outlines where you can watch collectively a 360 photosphere, or go into like more of a dome experience where you can watch some dome content together with other people, which I think is a great, you know, you could already watch.
That's my favorite use case of 360 2D, is that you're with other people and you're in a 3D environment and you're like, but what ends up happening is we stand around and go, what's that guy's problem? What's he waiting for? And where's that guy going? And we start commenting, we start creating stories for what everyone's, you know. So I'm like, oh, what have we done? This poor guy standing out in front of this camp at Burning Man. Now we're all sitting around making a story up about what his problem is. Or he's upset, he's waiting for his friend to come out and she's not coming. So I'm like, oh boy. But 360 2D sucks on your phone, on your web browser, you're dragging your cursor around, but in a dome experience in 360 is such a great communal thing. For sure.
Very cool. Well, is there anything else that's left unsaid? Any final thoughts you'd like to share to the broader immersive community?
You know, we love this community. It's a relatively small community. It's like a reunion when we go to AWE and everything, and we've met everybody, and, you know, we're happy to give everybody tours and bring them in, because I feel like they've been watching our little journey through the years, and now we're at the next plateau. And so bringing people like you and others in and having fun with them is something I'm looking forward to a lot. Athena, any fun?
Yeah, we do love giving tours. We've had various different groups. We had a Horizon Workspace group that came and we gave them a tour. Immersive Tech Week, we gave a tour. So if you have a group that you're part of and you want, even if it's just like a work group and, you know, for, you know, executive bonding, that you want to bring in. You can do it on your computer. It works on Mac and PC, just on a normal laptop, desktop. But it is more immersive if you're in a VR headset for the Quest. It does work on the Quest 2. A little glitchy, but it does work on the Quest 2, but it works best on the 3 and the 3S and the Pro. And we just love sharing it with people. And we would love to share it with everyone. So come go to burnersphere.com and set up your account. Oh, and every name is unique. So if you have a very specific name, a gamer name or a burner name or just your name that you want to make sure you have, you need to go ahead and sign up now. Because once that name is taken, you're going to have to be Doug J. 11.
So that's in the 90s. I had the 11th Doug J on AOL, and I joined a camp. That was my email, whatever. I didn't care. And they said, well, we have another Doug in camp, so we're just going to call you Doug J. 11. I'm like, no, please don't call me that. That's just this random code that AOL gave me back in the 90s. And so they insisted, and for years they've been, some people know me.
We still call him Doug J. 11.
Nice.
From the old days. Thank God I didn't have CompuServe, because then I would be a number, and that would be... So
very cool. Well, Doug and Athena, thanks so much for joining me and for taking me on a little tour of the Burnersphere. And yeah, like I said, I feel like that this is a format that is blending different genres of both social VR, but also this proper documentary segments that you have covering the culture of Burning Man over a number of years. And also like a historical collection of previous art that was featured there with like little placards that give you a little more context. And then also previous temples and previous, the big man that gets burnt, a history of some of those sculptures. And so, yeah, I feel like it's a real archive of this community, but also ways that you're kind of blending documentary techniques and pushing the edge of all the different formats and then introducing even new ones with the Gaussian splats and other things as well, as you continue to create this platform that's kind of fusing everything together in a way that is documenting this community and telling a really compelling story. So I really quite enjoyed exploring around and being able to kind of dip into these different moments from Burning Man that is kind of spatially contextualized relative to the map as I'm exploring around. So yeah, really enjoyed what you've been able to put together and highly recommend folks go check it out. So thanks again.
Well, and you got to explore it by yourself and you got to explore it with us. So you got to have both of those experiences. And I will say Burnersphere is perfect for people that are burner curious. Like yourself, who you don't know if you'll ever go to Burning Man. I get it. It's a heavy lift. It's hard. It's expensive. It's like, it's not an easy thing to do. This is an easy thing to do. And it's an easy way to plug into the community or explore it on your own. But if you've ever had just the inkling of what is this, Burnersphere is for you.
Awesome.
Love it. Thank you so much, Kent. You really sort of brought it together for me with your thoughts. So I really appreciate that.
So that was Athena Demos and Doug Jacobson of the Burnersphere. And so I have a number of different takeaways about this interview is that first that it's a super fascinating hybrid of immersive documentary, but also a social VR platform. And so they're using the affordances of the social VR platform to create this spatialized context that allows you to explore around, but also dip into this footage where you may just have a static shot from that place. And I think if you just watched a series of the static shots, you wouldn't have a map in your mind as to where that actually happened. But because it's providing you this virtualized, spatialized context, then when you jump into that footage, it has so much more context that you're going into it that it makes you feel like you're getting a much richer account of what's happening. So it definitely feels like an anthropological and sociological documentation, spatial anthropology, but also just interesting to see immersive edits documenting different aspects of the community. The community is so broad and large and it's changing every year that they're creating this documentation of that. And they're actually working in official collaboration with the Burning Man Project. And so I think after the pandemic, seeing the value of some of this virtualized platforms to give access to people, because you know one of the principles of Burning Man is radical inclusion. And so not everybody can go out into the desert. And so this is one way that you can start to get access to what's actually happening there on Burning Man. But I'd say the biggest thing that they're trying to figure out is this dialectic between the gifting culture and decommodification. They can't take any sponsorships, but they're trying to document in the spirit of the gifting culture, there's a lot of stuff that's for free. You could just go as a guest and check out a limited subsection of the content that they have. But there's also membership dues that you can pay, you know, pay $48 a year to get access to all the entirety of all their different footage that they've shot across the entirety of the playa. And yeah, trying to recreate different aspects of immediacy, because they're having these social VR events and there's people that are gathering together. So you're able to get some of this kind of serendipitous collisions. If you're actually on the playa, they talk about the playa magic and the synchronicities that are happening, and radical self-expression and the communal effort, the civic responsibility and participation, allowing people to create expression of their art, but also to have the community receive that art, but also revitalize different aspects of civic society, because a lot of what they're trying to do is be radically inclusive, but also create a context where it's doing something that's different than what's happening in the mainstream culture, where everything is driven by trying to profit and commodify everything. And capitalism is such a huge thing that they're existing in the context of capitalism, but they're trying to create a new culture out of that. And there's something around the conditions of being on the playa that I think is kind of traumatic in a way that forces people to rely upon each other in a way that creates this bonding experience, that you're all kind of going through this intense context with these values as a guiding principle and creating this kind of transformative experience for a lot of people. And so, and the virtualized manifestation of that, it's a lot different because you're not committing for that entire time. You're kind of dipping in and out, and you're still largely within the context of your own home, but they're able to embody a lot of these different principles from Burning Man and give you a little bit of a taste of what's happening there. So definitely check out the Burnersphere. They're still in this kind of early access phase. I mean, they've officially launched on July 22nd, 2025, but they're still kind of growing out the community, having different events. There's this kind of paradox within social VR, which is like, if you build it, they will come. If you do build it, then will they come? Then I think a lot of these events are able to provide that stopgap where you get people that are actually coming up for a specific time and place. But there's also tons of stuff to just explore on your own, because it's a wide, vast, spatialized context that they're starting to bring in so many of these different assets, but also footage from all over the playa. So it's just a really fascinating way of kind of using the affordances of social VR and virtual reality to be able to create this really immersive documentary experience with all this other footage and documentation that they're doing. So yeah, that's all I have for today. And I just wanted to thank you for listening to the Voices of VR podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a listener-supported podcast, and so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue bringing this coverage. So you can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.